Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Turbo Time podcast. I'm your host, Alyssa Espinoza, the managing editor of Turbo Machinery International. And today we are diving into part two of our podcast on compressor maps with the Mythbusters. In part one, Klaus Brunn and Rainer Kurtz defined what compressor maps are, how they're generated, and what they're useful for. So today they dive into two extremes on the compressor map, choke and surge, and what happens to the compressor when they operate in these extremes. So let's dive in.
You know, on the extreme sides of the map are surge and choke. So can you, you know, tell us what these are, you know, and what happens to the compressor when they operate in either of these extremes?
They're pure unadulterated evil. That's I'm just kidding. I mean, on the left side of the map, you have surge, and I'll let Rainer jump in here in a second. And on the right side, you have choke or overload or stonewall. We'll talk. I think we really need to take those topics separately and start talking about one first and the other. So let's start, I think, with surge. Our most basic definition is kind of sort of the compressor head cannot overcome the system imposed pressure, so that the pressure on the outside on the suction and discharge, and the compressor is not making enough head to overcome that pressure differential. And so instead of the flow going forward through the compressor, the flow then suddenly wants to turn around and flow backwards through the machine until that pressure balances again, at which point the machine can overcome that head, and then it starts the process forward again. And that becomes a circular process, and you get into these surge cycles. And it's a fairly complex thing. Rainer, why did you jump in?
Klaus makes a very important point, and I really have to emphasize that. Surge is an interaction between the compressor and the system around it, meaning a compressor by itself doesn't surge. As Klaus said, if the system forces the compressor to make more pressure ratio, then under whatever conditions the compressor is going to make, then the gas does what it wanted to do in the first place, which is go from the high pressure to the low pressure. And that basically means it goes backwards through the compressor. And the tricky part with that is on the compressor map, we basically show what the compressor does. So the map in it by itself and that search line that you find on the map is essentially something that we derive from the compressor performance. Klaus also mentioned how these these lines of constant speed are shaped. And there you will find that if you start at a certain flow and then lower that flow at a given speed line, you will come to a point where that speed line reaches a maximum. So that's basically the maximum amount of pressure ratio that the compressor can make at that point and surges. But under certain lab conditions, you can actually let the compressor operating past that line without anything happening. But again, that is something that you can accomplish under lab conditions. For the operation in the field, it's useless. So in the field or in these maps, we usually define that surge line as essentially a stability limit for the compressor, and then assume that the system may do some additional things, but from a compressor prediction standpoint, we don't know that.
So, I mean, basically, we draw, as manufacturers, we draw our surge line to the highest head point for a speed line, and that's a somewhat conservative assumption, but Rainer is right. To the left of that point, the flow is unstable because theoretically there is a pressure possible or a flow possible for a given pressure that gives you two solutions. So it's basically from a mathematical perspective, unstable. In reality, from a physical perspective, sometimes you have a phenomenon called rotating stall going on. Sometimes you have other things going on, but you see initially some flow instability in the compressor that indicate that it's becoming inefficient operating where it's operating. And then eventually it's becoming so inefficient that it can't create the head or the pressure ratio anymore that it needs to overcome the system imposed pressure. And then, as Rainer stated, this flow starts going backwards and then it goes back to where it has enough pressure on the suction side and low pressure on the discharge side where it can do that again. And so it becomes circular. when we draw the search line, we really don't draw anything beyond the search line on the left side of the map, right? It's kind of blank if you look at the compressor map. There's nothing on that. That's because it becomes really kind of squirrely and squiggly. If you were to draw lines there as to what the compressor would be doing, it would be a bunch of squiggles and squirrels and things, and so that is not very useful, and so we stop using it. And we really don't want anybody to operate on the left side of the search line anyway, because in many cases, that search phenomena can cause damage to the machine because you have flow going backwards and forwards at some frequency. And that frequency depends on, you know, the discharge volume to the check valve and some other things that are going on in the machine, the speed, et cetera. We can even predict that frequency and the amplitude nowadays, and not accurately, but we can predict it somewhat, how bad that surge pulsation is. But in many cases, not in all cases, but in many cases, that surge operation can be damaging, and prolonged operation in surge in most cases will actually damage your machine, and you don't want to operate there.
Klaus mentioned the aerodynamic components of the compressor. Any type of aerodynamic device has a certain range of operating conditions where it will work well. Take, for example, a plane, and you can do that with a small Cessna. Actually, you start to fly slower and slower, and you increase the angle of attack of your wing. At some point in time, the flow does not follow the wing shape anymore, but it really breaks down. So that's when the plane stalls. We have aerodynamic components in the impeller and in the diffuser, one way or another, of a compressor. So essentially, all these components have a certain operating range where they essentially follow the intended flow path that the designer came up with. But once you get outside of that range, the flow will no longer do what you want it to do, and that's when you see stall. The key thing, though, is that stall is not necessarily automatically leading to surge. Meaning, in a let's say, 6-stage compressor, I can stall 1 stage, and I may not necessarily drive the compressor automatically into surge. But what you can say with a high amount of certainty is that once you have components stalling, you're not far away, or you may already pass the line where the machine will surge.
And we as manufacturers generally don't want you to operate there because it will break the machine and you'll come back and blame us for it. And so we have usually a surge control system, which is basically a recycle valve. And so instead of the flow going back through the machine, the flow now has the ability to recircle around the machine. And so you balance the pressure that way, or you're basically increasing the flow through the machine to get yourself away from that surge line. That's why on the map you see that surge line as to this kind of an absolute operating line. Don't operate beyond that. And the surge control system, if it's properly designed, will keep you out of that. Now, there are some circumstances, for example, if you have a fast shutdown, an emergency shutdown, when you may briefly cross that line in some cases. And sometimes it's avoidable if you have a very robust surge control system. In some cases, it's almost not avoidable. And then it really depends on how high your pressures are, how robust your design is from a bearing and stability perspective as to will this transient surge event, will this cause damage to your machine? It may, it may not, and it really depends on the case. Some manufacturers allow it for a certain amount of time or number of cycles, surge cycles, and in some cases it is not allowed by the manufacturer. It really, really depends. And so there are some pretty good tools available now to predict this behavior. It's not 100% accurate. There's still some engineering uncertainty in there, but there are some pretty good tools out there for it. They're called dynamic response or dynamic surge analysis, where you can predict, how is your compressor system, your compressor and system around it, and the surge control system, and going to keep your machine out of surge, even in very fast transient events.
You also have to be aware that the surge control system or anti-surge control system that Klaus mentions, if you see that as part of the compressor system, what it basically does, it allows you to run your compressor station all the way down to zero flow,
if the system allows you to recycle enough. So from a station perspective, you're not necessarily limited by the map of the compressor to the low flow side. Actually, the recycle system allows you to go all the way to zero flow, but it's basically you're recycling gas. Now, I actually mentioned earlier that essentially the aerodynamic components of the compressor at some point in time when I lower the flow get out of the range where they actually work properly. This, by the way, is also true for very high flows. So essentially all the components will drop in efficiency if I further and further increase the flow. Klaus also mentioned that there's a theoretical line that basically a straight line that would define the head versus flow characteristic of an ideal compressor that would not have any losses. And you can imagine if I increase the losses further and further, then the amount of head that I subtract from my ideal line becomes bigger and bigger. And that's one of the things that I see in when I operate the machine at higher and higher flows. It's not necessarily that there are any dramatic things are happening. It's just that your efficiency gets very bad. Now, the other thing that's happening at high flows is actually something that's called choke. And there's a true aerodynamic choke that basically comes from the fact that, for example, if I had a nozzle and I would feed that nozzle with gas at a certain pressure, and then I would lower the pressure on the other side more and more, then you can imagine that there's probably going to be more gas flowing through that nozzle because the pressure ratio comes higher. But there comes the point where actually at the narrowest point of the nozzle, I get to the speed of sound. And at that point in time, I can lower the discharge pressure as much as I want. The flow doesn't go up anymore. So that's true aerodynamic choke. And one of the confusions with compressor maps is that the shape of the compressor map could be either at the high flow side dictated by just the fact that your efficiency gets worse and worse, or you can actually have a situation where some component of the compressor actually chokes, meaning there is, even if you lower the discharge pressure of the compressor more and more, you will not get more flow through the compressor.
Yeah, and Rainer really nicely transitioned us from surge to choke, which is the other side of the map. Before we completely go there, I do want to say one thing. Sometimes you hear pump people also talk about surge. Pumps do not surge. You need compressible flow to get the surge phenomenon, because you basically need your molecules to be either squished together or not squished together. Otherwise, there is no such thing as a surge phenomenon. You can show that physically. So sometimes when pump people talk about, oh, my thing is surging, what they're really talking about is cavitation. And that has nothing to do with surge and is a completely opposite phenomena. But Rainer started nicely talking about the other side of the map, which is that thing called choke, stonewall, overload. It really depends not just on the manufacturer, but actually what it is. Because as Rainer stated, there is a thing called choke, which means your flow is reaching sonic speed limit. That, by the way, can also not happen in incompressible flow. There is no sonic speed limit. And so you're not going to see that real choke phenomenon happen in a pump either. So you don't have that limit in a pump usually happening. So just from kind of a conceptual perspective, you know, where surge is your evil criminal, you have really choke is more like your juvenile delinquent. But remember, even juvenile delinquents can kill you, right? And so even choke can get you in significant trouble and break your machine. Choke is a little bit more like dependent on the manufacturer. Some manufacturer will allow you to operate all the way to the bottom to basically pressure ratio of one and say it's okay. Other manufacturers will say, no, we have a limit here. And it there is a reason for having a limit. The reason is that, as Rainer mentioned, is you are getting into unstable flow areas, right? You're not, your flow isn't following the blades perfectly anymore. Your flow separation, you can make it vortex shedding, you may get even things like flutter. And then in the worst case scenario, this flutter can lead to a, you know, aerostructural interaction and can break your machine, which has happened. So we, for example, we have a choke limit or an overload limit or whatever, stonewall limit. And that's based on experience where we found that, okay, beyond a certain flow, you're safe. If you keep operating out there, it's probably going to be okay for a while. But if you do it long enough, it will probably break your machine. That very much depends on the robustness of your machine, the robustness of your design, what you're designed for, what your overall flow range is, et cetera. So it's, this is not like surge where it's a fixed, you're going over the cliff kind of limit. It's a much more subtle kind of change into a regime where you have flow instability.
And you have to be aware, there are a couple of mechanical issues that will cause troubles. So first of all, if you measure the vibrations of your rotor, they will go up when you near surge, but they also will go up a little when you get into the high flow in the choke region, except that most people don't worry too much about the vibration in the choke region because your pressure ratio is already very low. The other thing that happens is that any rotor generates an axial thrust. And so that's why on a compressor you have a thrust bearing that essentially, together with a balance piston, one way or another, basically compensates for that thrust. Now, the problem with that thrust, it's not a constant number. So the amount of thrust that actually the thrust bearing has to actually absorb, which is the thrust of the impeller minus the counter thrust from the balance piston, so that thrust changes when you operate the machine from surge to choke. And if you look at one indicator of the load on that thrust bearing is how hot it gets. So you may actually get to the situation where if you operate the machine too far in the choke, that thrust bearing gets too hot, and manufacturers will prevent you from going there, for example, by defining an overload limit. The other thing is a little bit more insidious. Dry gas seals typically get their seal gas from the discharge side of the compressor, and they rely in their functioning from a pressure differential between suction and discharge. If you're deep in choke, you don't have the pressure differential. So you may actually have issues with your dry gas seals. So again, there is a logical reason why people define one way or another these overload limits.
Yeah, so this is not going to make you very popular, but when you see a compressor operating in overload and choke, it's usually the result of poor planning, poor engineering, a basically misapplication of your machine to whatever the system is. You spend a lot of money buying yourself a compressor, and a compressor is designed to make a reasonably high pressure ratio or high head. And what you end up on the choke side is a very, very low head and very large flow. For that, you could use a blower, which is a lot cheaper than a compressor. And tend to be often also more robust, et cetera, for some applications. So usually we see compressors operating in that choke region if there's been changes in the system over time, or if there was poor planning or whatever. Really, why run a compressor at a really low pressure ratio? You should either come up with a different solution, or you should bypass the compressor entirely if you're making a very, very low pressure ratio. So in many stages, that can be helped by restaging the compressor, by looking at the machine, by maybe adding a different type of machine to it, a higher flow machine, lower head machine or so. But in general, if you end up having a centrifugal compressor that you see operating 90-95% of its time in choke, you should probably ask yourself the question, do I have the right machine installed for this service, and do I want to have a different machine? Because it's not just that it may break it in some cases, but it is also that you're operating incredibly inefficiently. What I mentioned earlier, the efficiency islands are really the highest efficiencies are closer to the surge line. Usually, they're not all that close to the choke line. At the choke line, you end up, you know, with these efficiencies around 40-50% that are just miserable, and sometimes even lower than that because you're not you're really not making any head, and you're just using your compressor like a blower. So it's not quite as bad as surge, but it's something that if you see your compressor operating on the right side of the map continuously, you should probably do something about it and change your design.
So my final question, and I'm sorry if you kind of already touched on some of this, but what about transient operation of a compressor? How do you keep the compressor from surging during fast system upsets, and how bad are the forces during surge?
Essentially, we mentioned that that the compressor in a system surges when the system pressure exceeds the pressure ratio at the pressure making capability of the compressor. Now, there are things, for example, like emergency shutdowns, where you have to shut down a compressor station very fast on let's say a gas turbine driven compressor or an electric motor. You basically turn off the fuel to the gas turbine. If you have an electric motor driven compressor used, you open the breaker. So that basically means that from literally 1 second to the next, the power input in the system is practically zero. That means that the system still has a lot of inertia, so the compressor does not stop spinning, but it will reduce its speed very fast. And very fast means you may lose 20 or 30% of your speed in a second. What that means is that the head-making capability of the compressor is drastically reduced, because head goes with speed. So now the task is that I reduce the system pressure fast enough so that the system pressure does not exceed the pressure that the compressor can make. And the way I do that is by having a anti-surge valve that essentially recycles gas from the discharge side of the compressor back to the suction side of the compressor. And that's really the purpose of dynamic simulations, that you size these valves so that they're fast enough and big enough that they can remove the pressure from the discharge side of the compressor fast enough so that they keep the compressor from surging during that shutdown.
So you get this, what Rainer mentioned, we call it also an S-curve, which is because it looks like an S. Basically, your machine will, your operating point will move to the left and downwards, and then it kind of eventually turns around. But during that first sweep, it will very often cross into surge if your surge control valve doesn't open the recycle line fast enough, or if you have too much discharge volume between your compressor discharge and your check valve. Or various other things. I mean, you can, there's other things, obviously the best is a very fast recycle valve, but the recycle valves, they're mechanical devices. And so they're a compromise between size, how much flow they can handle, and how fast they can open. There's other things. You can have something called a hot gas bypass, which is a valve that just slams open, that is basically goes directly from the compressor discharge to the compressor suction line, that allows you to recycle gas very, very quickly in these kind of cases. There's also some operating strategies which are probably not quite so good. But for example, if you do see a signal for a shutdown, you could theoretically delay that shutdown of the machine by maybe a second or so, give your recycle valve a chance to open before you're basically stopping to provide power to you or to your compressor as a driver. That is not really recommended, because if you do that, I mean, usually your machine wants to shut down for a reason, right? I mean, you don't do an emergency shutdown because you're just happy to do an emergency shutdown. You're doing it because there's something that gone terribly wrong in your machine and you want to shut down as quickly as possible. So some of these strategies that you sometimes hear people talking about, it, they're not the wisest thing. The only other thing I'd like to mention about transient operations, we talked about fast shutdowns, emergency shutdown. Your recycle system, and we've kind of moved away from the discussion of compressor maps, but it's all kind of, part goes together. But your recycle control system is really designed for several operating scenarios. For startup, where you usually start with a wide open recycle valve, and you also have to worry a little bit about going to choke when you start up the machine, you're spinning the machine up, and eventually you close your recycle valve. Then it's also designed for normal shutdowns, where you then open again the recycle valve as you come down in head. and then fast shutdown, then the normal operation to keep yourself, because there could be other system upsets. You could have some accidentally, some suction or discharge valve rapidly closed on you because of some mistake or some blockage occurring in your piping, and you want to still keep your compressor from failing when that happens. So there's other transient operating scenarios. There's things as obscure where you can have a recip compressor operating in parallel with a centrifugal compressor where they can affect each other due to pulsations. And that's when you get into very specialized topics. But again, there's a lot of good work that's been done in these areas looking at how the systems operate together. And there's also a lot of good prediction tools that are now available that weren't maybe available 40 or 50 years ago that are now available that are fairly accurate in predicting and what your machine is going to do. So when things go terribly wrong, either on the surge or on the choke side, it's usually because there was a lack of proper planning or engineering done in the first place. It's usually not because there is just a fundamental flaw with the compressor or so.
You might ask yourself, okay, so why are we worried about that? So what if the flow goes backwards through the compressor? Well, the problem is that you generate a lot of forces. For example, the axial forces that I had talked about earlier will change dramatically from if you go from forward flow to backwards flow. So what that means that with you slam the compressor rotor with tremendous amount of force into your thrust bearings. So, which does a couple of things. You may damage seals, you may damage thrust bearings if you do this long enough and often enough. By the way, just to be clear, centrifugal compressors are very, very robust machines. So in general, if you search them once or twice, it's not that they're going to fall apart. But no manufacturer will be able to tell you, okay, you can do this 20 times, you can do that 100 times before you have effects that range from bearing issues, from damaged bearings, to performance degradation because some of your seal clearances went open. The other way, by the way, why you want to avoid surge is also that essentially you're heating up the gas that's in the compressor dramatically. So if you go through surge cycle, you basically feed energy always into the same gas molecules. So there are reports from compressors that were, for whatever reason, in prolonged surge, where the temperatures in the casings were so high that the paint on the casing start to blister. And again, this is not low temperature plate. Paint. So again, it is a operating condition for the compressor that you want to avoid.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that can go wrong in surge, and Rainer mentioned most of it. I mean, the closest clear component that usually fails first is the axial thrust bearing that goes first, and once that touches or touches hard, then that's it. Then you can have to shut down your machine and pull the thrust bearing and replace it usually. And that's not a happy occasion for most operators. Now, there have been some better, I wouldn't say perfect, but some better tools in the last couple of years that have come out to kind of predict how bad is the surge event versus the robustness of the machine. Rainer and I worked on some of that in the past where we looked at, we have a non-dimensional number that we came up with that is a surge relevance parameter that kind of looks at, you know, how bad is the surge event, that looks at, you know, stiffness of your thrust bearings, et cetera, versus the pressure across the machine while it surges and surge cycles and so on. So overall, though, you know, keep yourself out of surge. You know, if you go into surge, then you usually want to inspect the machine before you do a lot of other things.
And there's also often a lot of misunderstanding what surge control systems actually doing. I mean, your anti-surge control system is there to keep your compressor from surging. So if the system is sized correctly and works properly, and there are a couple of factors that impact that. So as long as that system works properly, your compressor does not surge. Now, there are often discussion about surge detection systems, and there are a couple of ways that that indicate when a compressor may be in surge. But these systems are backup systems. So the key thing is that you have an anti-surge control system that keeps you keeps your machine from surging. And with proper design, you can actually get systems that prevent that. And then you have, as a backup system, something that says, okay, now my system is malfunctioning and I need to do something about it.
And this is perfect because it allows me now to tie in back to our original discussion of the compressor map, because what fails most of the time in a surge control system isn't a surge algorithm or a surge control. It is actually your measurement of your flow or your pressure of your machine. So when your surge control system doesn't work properly, it's most of the time related to, for example, your flow control or your flow measurement not being accurately measured. And that's, by the way, the same thing that needs to work properly if you want to know the operating point on your compressor map. Because if you don't have the proper instrumentation to measure suction pressure, suction temperature, discharge temperature, and flow, you can have the greatest compressor map in the world. You won't know where you're on it because you're not measuring your operating point correctly.
Thank you so much for talking about compressor maps and surge and choke and kind of everything in between.
Well, thank you very much for having us. It was a good discussion, a little longer this time, but appreciated and enjoyed it very much and looking forward to the next one.
Yeah, thanks for bringing up that topic. I mean, it is an important topic for anybody who builds and uses compressors. And as you can see, we had a lot of fun talking about it. So thank you very much.
And to hear more about compressor maps, you can actually check out our September-October print issue where Klaus and Reiner have a two-part column on the topic. The first part's in our current issue, and the second part will be in the 2025 handbook. So thank you both again, and thank you to our listeners for tuning in to this episode of the TurboTime podcast. I'm your host, Alyssa Espinoza, and we will see you next time.